Welcome and hello, everybody. This is the REI Society Podcast, where we are informing you everything real estate and business related so that you can be successful in REI investing. We're sharing the tools, tips, and stories from people who have already made it. And my name is Brandon Thompson, your host. Each week, we'll bring extraordinary guests so that you can learn real estate from the best.
Welcome, all. I just want to say hi, hello. In this episode, we have Steve Valentine, and it's a great episode. We go over long-term rental investing and why it's important to invest in your future and in people, but also we have a fun time, and the fun time was because I accidentally fell off of the conversation at the end, and I was in a storm in South Carolina while visiting my short-term rental, and the storm knocked out my internet. My computer went silent, and he couldn't see me, and I couldn't see him, nor could we hear each other. So for the last couple of minutes, Steve ran the show until I magically popped back on. So anyways, it was quite comical as far as the ending. I just wanted to disclaim that up front so that you're like, what happened? Now you know as you go through the episode, if I disappear, that's what happened. But yeah, I can't wait for you to listen to this episode. It is so good. There's so many nuggets in here. Like, it's power-packed. So get ready, and here we go.
Mr. Steve Valentine, how you doing today?
What's up, brother? How are you?
I am better than I've ever been before. Thanks for asking.
Right.
Steve Valentine of the Valentine Group. You are the residential expert, a residential creative strategist. Tell us more about yourself, how long you've been in business, and why you do what you do.
All right. Well, I'm in the Phoenix market. It's one of the hottest markets in the country right now.
Literally.
Yeah, it's hot temperature-wise, hot real estate-wise, all the above. But I've been in the business 21 years this July. Well, actually, I think it just passed 21 years. All in the Phoenix market, all in my backyard. Haven't really ventured out. Like, you're all over the freaking place. So I stay in my backyard and started out in the business just as a residential agent, and then ventured into, my dad passed 5 years ago, really ventured into the investment side and the creative side. But more importantly, it was about teaching people how to build wealth through real estate. And part of that reason is just, you know, my dad died at the age of 63 in the business for 40 years and died not owning one piece of real estate. So yeah, that was a big mind shift for me.
I have listened to a few different podcasts with you being the guest. And from what I understand, you are a third generation real estate expert.
Yeah.
Who didn't want to be in real estate because of his parents. Tell us a little bit about that and why you chose to go into mechanics and automobiles and then jump back into real estate.
Well, I'm reliving that all over again, considering I have a 15 and 17 year old. And, you know, they're knee deep in the cars, which is kind of taking me back into that, which is awesome. I love it. But they, you know, when I was 16, I loved building cars. I loved building trucks. It was a passion of mine. I learned by the Braille method, right? I broke stuff and had to figure out how to fix it. And when I was 21, I had, you know, spent my life savings on tools, and somebody stole my tools. And it was like God's greatest blessing to me, because, I got a big fat insurance check, and I was peace out of the business, you know? So when you get an insurance check, that's just as much as of a year's worth of salary. It gave me the ability, some cushion to go and ask my dad if I could try the real estate thing, and the rest is history. But, yeah, you know, I got into it from the standpoint of my dad was not a silver spoon feeder at all. The first 2 years in the business, I worked for $8 an hour, and it was a low level internship.
You know, what's funny about that story is my daughters, I've got a 16 year old and a 12 year old, two girls, they hate real estate. Neither one of them want anything to do with it, but I'm kind of like behind the scenes, like, I just really want them to go in real estate when they're a little bit older and they understand it a little bit more. So maybe I'll let them listen to this podcast and see how successful you guys are over there where you're at. Why do you feel like it is important for the average bear or person to learn and educate themselves in real estate, particularly long-term?
Well, I think there's a couple of different reasons, right? I think that, you know, if you look at the average person, you know, it's like I did a video this morning, which is how do I get into real estate, right? How do I start real estate investing? Because most people think it takes a lot of money to do it. And it's really more of a mindset than it is a money issue for most people. You know, the mindset is that if I go out and I'm 20 years old, like I was, and bought my first house, my parents kind of forced me and like, you got to buy a first house, but you're never going to sell it. I mean, I did later on, but the objective is that do you want to thank your 20-year-old self when you're 50 for hanging on to all these properties? And if you look at real estate from a long-term benefit, if you take out the cycles of the market and you just look at the rent, right, it doesn't matter what the house is worth, right? What matters is that somebody else is paying it off over time. And it's, you know, it's a depreciable asset. So it's a tax savings. And then there's just some benefits going long-term that, you know, eventually the goal is, well, do you want $5,000 a month of residual income or mailbox money? Do you want 10,000? And then start looking at, you know, what does real estate afford for that residual income when you get to, you know, you say retirement age, but right, like Dave Ramsey and Chris Hogan talk about it, which retirement is a number, not an age. So at what point in time do you have enough money to walk away from whatever you're doing in residual money? Yeah, that's what I love about real estate. It sits and spins and does its thing in the background while I'm earning an income doing other things.
That's why I like it. My wife and I, we deal with the four pillars of real estate: wholesale and wholetail. I don't wholesale anymore. We buy homes and clean them up, put them back in the MLS and do wholetailing.
Right.
We do flips, brings in, it's capital banking, essentially. We're making a lot of capital, bringing it back in, and then we're reinvesting that money into long-term ventures through long-term rentals and short-term rentals. And I completely agree with you that while you are working a job, essentially, this is really good benefit. It creates really good benefits for tax deductions, as well as creating that strategy so that you can have income every single month, and when you are tired or just want to go rest, you still have money flowing. And right, that is definitely one of the reasons why I love it. Let me ask you this. So you said you've been involved in real estate since you were 20, since you bought your first home. How many rentals do you have right now, if you don't mind me asking? You don't have to tell
us. We're approaching 35. Awesome. Rentals, and it's a combination of short-term, commercial. You know, the only commercial building we own is the one that we office out of. And then everything else is long-term. So a couple of VRBOs, a couple of second homes, and then the long-term cheaper rentals.
So you have the asset allocation. That's pretty cool. What's your favorite aspect of holding property? And which individual sector would you say is your favorite? Short-term, long-term, commercial, multifamily?
You know,
that's a little question, but go ahead.
Here's the favorite part of it. It's the deal. It's the story behind the deal, right? Every one of the houses that I own has a story to it. It wasn't about like, I just decided to start investing in real estate. I did, but it started with stories. I mean, the very first one we bought, you know, I bought from a client that wanted to sell that couldn't sell. So I took it over. But you know, now it's more of the deals that come across that we're buying with equity in them, where we're helping another family out. That's kind of my favorite part of it. I really like, you know, my favorite. So you go back to answer the question, you know, my favorite's really the long-term, right? Yeah. You get people in there. One of the reasons I like the long-term is a couple different reasons. It's a long-term with other people's money. Mm-hmm. So somebody else is paying that asset off. It's, you know, it's going up and down in value, but I really don't care. I know that the rents are way up right now. The values are way up, but it's also providing a home for a family. So we're really big on renovating our rentals and making them super nice, for the reason that our average tenant right now is 7 years. And right, if you put that in perspective, that's almost a third of the life of a mortgage. So if I can keep a family in there 7 to 10 years, because we've made it nice and we're providing a family, that's really my goal, my end goal.
7 years, and you've attained that, I guess. You've had people stay 7 years and beyond.
That's our average right now.
Holy cow. I have never had, well, I'm not gonna say never. I have had people stay 4 or 5, but seven, that's a feat in itself. That's awesome. Talk to us about a little bit of your favorite creative financing that you utilize when you are solving problems with sellers and then adopting their properties, their burdens. What's some creative strategy you utilize to purchase these properties?
I think it's not so much the strategy of what, not necessarily the deal, but the strategy of using the equity method, which, you know, a lot of people are really unfamiliar with. And it's where, you know, it's a strategy I designed where you can utilize the equity in a below market by adding value to it, refinancing it, and utilizing the appraised value as the equity. But there's certain steps to making that happen. And that's, you know, we're approaching $15 million worth of rental properties. Mm-hmm. And I probably have a couple $100,000 of my own money in it. Everything else has been bought using the equity method that was kind of stumbled across trying to figure out, like, how do I buy more stuff with less money? And that's really been the kicker to, you know, to put it on steroids.
All right. So you're pulling off, I guess, what I'm thinking, it's bigger pockets. They coined the burr, which you and I have been doing this before they were even wearing diapers. Right. Is this what you're doing, is the buy, rehab, rent out, refinance and repeat?
Yeah, but it's a little different. There's a twist to it. The twist is that, you know, most people buy them, they renovate them, you know, they do all that stuff. But if you do it with a hard money and a couple of different deeds of trust, there's a way to actually get in, get out with all of your money still intact, including repair money, and be into it for 25%, you know, 75% loan to value. And now you've got an asset that's completely financed on a 30-year, and you have zero cash into it because you've done two things. You've bought it below market and you've increased the value by doing the repairs on it. But there's a strategy to it, and it's step by step that has to be taken. And it's something that, you know, I've designed for my investors, like, this is how it works.
Right, right. Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Would you mind sharing the step by step, and for number's sake, maybe you don't have to give the address, but maybe a real life deal that you've done in the past?
Yeah, I mean, it's I'll go back to the very first house I bought, sure. Right? So it was a Zillow lead that came in through the real estate business, standing there talking to a guy that's from your neck of the woods, from North Carolina. And, you know, he's like, hey, my mom just passed. I'm in here for the weekend. I don't want to clean up her stuff. He's like, so we're talking about the retail value of the house, which at the time was about 160. Well, I'm like, okay, so if we do commissions, we do repairs, this is about your net. And this is the very first time I walked away from a house. I'm like, hey, what if I give you $100,000? I'm like, well, worst case scenario, I lose this listing and this guy tells me to go pound sand. And he's like, give me 105 and I'm out. And I'm like, oh shit. Wow. Now what? Where do I get money? How do I repair it? I didn't have any money at the time.
Yeah.
And so we ended up buying that with hard money, putting a tenant in it, doing a little bit of refinance or rehab on it. And then a year later, we were able to refinance based on the appraised value, which we got all of our repair money out of it. And it appraised for, you know, leaving that 25% equity in it, giving us a house that's now, I think our mortgage payment is $750 a month on it, rents for $1,500. And I mean, what's your rate of return on nothing, you know, no money into it, you know, and it's cash flowing $700 a month.
Yeah.
It's a pretty substantial return on investment.
If you have no skin in the game, essentially, when it's all said and done, your cash on cash return of investment is infinity and beyond.
Right. Right.
Yeah. That's why I love the game of real estate. It truly is a game. Like you said, every individual property has a story that attaches with it. You're helping people with problems. You're the janitor sweeping the floors clean, and it is fun and it can be stressful at the same time.
Oh, it can totally be stressful, but it depends on how much stress you want to add to your plate. You know, you live in my world or your world. You know, I always joke with people. I'm like, you know, my wife has a shoe closet with like 90 pairs of shoes in it. If I had a house closet, it'd have all these houses in it that you're like pulling off and moving around and you're wearing here and there. You know, we buy houses like it's just a daily occurrence. But it becomes fun. But, you know, you start to alleviate some of that stress with different strategies and where you're going to, you know, where does it fit in the box, right? The category.
I know I'm all over the place. I'm kind of the ADD podcast host. I go from here to here, there, wherever. But we somehow form a narrative and people like it. So that's really, really good. What I get excited about is how creative you are and the fact that you went essentially broke back in the recession. You were $1 million in debt. You should have went bankrupt. You didn't go bankrupt. You followed Dave Ramsey and you worked yourself out through the snowball effect and through real estate again. So obviously I've heard the story. Why don't you share the story to the audience listening so that they can be inspired and have a little hope just in case they're experiencing something with the coronavirus economy right now.
So it's crazy to think about this. Like, let's take the coronavirus and look at the same impact as the 2007 crash, right? Mm-hmm. Similar type scenarios. I don't think they're the same, but similar. Like, somebody could have lost their job and they're down and out and they're behind on payments. So here's where I was at. 2007, leading up to 2007, the real estate market was crazy here. I was in my 20s. I mean, we're making money. People are giving you credit like it's a gumball machine. And then the market crashed. We had gotten into the construction business. We had gotten into all kinds of different businesses. And I think we were almost 60 grand a week in payroll. We had a fleet of trucks. I mean, it was insane. You know, I thought I was king of the world back then. The reality is I was just living on credit and somebody else's dime. I didn't know freaking how to read a P&L back then for anything. If I knew then, you know, what I know now, things would be a lot different, and they are. So we personally guaranteed a lot of debt that was supposed to be a partnership with my parents. And my dad was going in one direction. I just decided, having two toddlers and I was married, I'm like, I have to stop this somewhere. Mm-hmm. Right. So as a man, my kids, I'm like, my wife and I just made the decision to split the partnership and we walked away. When we walked away, we had just lost our house to foreclosure. This is before it was popular to do. So I was like, you know, I'm in real estate. I lose my house to foreclosure. I can't even rent a house because I have foreclosure on my record. It wasn't acceptable at the time. Thank God my sister was at another property management company and she kind of stuck me into a house pretty much. So we got through that and, you know, we had like one blow after the next in that time frame, because a year later, while we're broke, I really broke myself. I broke my neck, was almost paralyzed in 2008 doing a Mad Mud run. So we kind of had to deal with that as well, which, you know, by the grace of God, obviously my neck's fine now, but I've got 7 pins in there. And so then it was, and I think here's the big takeaway from all of it before I keep going. Life's going to present you opportunities, and you latching onto that opportunity and saying, like, I'm going to be the best hamburger flipper or the best person, and I'm going to work night and day to understand I have this opportunity. So my broker at the time gave me an opportunity to do foreclosures, you know, the REO days. And if you didn't have an REO account in Phoenix back in that time, you were grinding, you know, selling $50,000 houses for $1,000. An REO account, it was a volume deal. So my job, when I was given that opportunity, I'm like, I'm going to stick my nose so far up everybody's ass during this time, because this was my opportunity. This was how I was going to get out of this debt. And so I went to work. It was 20-hour days. We were figuring things out. I mean, we're clearing nasty condos that were like $9,000 at the time. You didn't know if you were going to make it out of half of them. But it was an opportunity that I saw that I wasn't going to let go of. And so I was so focused on getting out of debt and everything that, you know, we just went nose to the grindstone. And over that 5-year period of time, we sold about 5,000 REO properties. We paid $1 million worth of credit card debt off in that time. We owed American Express $400,000 plus a bunch of other stuff. And we just, all the way till 2012, we paid everybody back. We got taxes underway and we were able to buy a house again. But you have to look at the opportunity, you know, that we're all given. And sometimes people, you like, you talked about your kids earlier, right? Mm-hmm. You want to shake them because they don't see the opportunity.
Yeah.
But they have to want the opportunity and they have to want to go after it. You can't force anybody to do it.
That is right. That is correct. I completely agree. You know, what's funny is you have a very similar story to what I lived through. And I guess that story is the American dream. You know, we didn't give up. We learned, we succeeded, we fell backwards. We reinvested again into ourselves, into our family. And then we grew and prospered. We went forth and prospered. I think that there is a similar story with a lot of people that went through that era. that we went through in the pre-recession days and the post-recession days of 2008. You got a couple of years up on me, me being in the business for about 18 years now. Do you have a lot of friends that went through that, that bounced, that fell backwards on their ass, but they walked up, they walked out of it, not unscathed, but they did go forth and prosper. Do you have a lot of people that you know that actually succeeded through that after falling backwards on their ass?
You know, I think, right, it's you look at the five people you surround yourself with. And I think that everybody that, you know, even looking at Chris and our mastermind, you know, they went through the same thing. He was a lender, right? And they've obviously bounced back. And you look at all the other people that are part of our mastermind in that aspect, you know, there's definitely, I have several friends. One of them, I don't think he hit the ground as hard as I did. But one of my business partners here in Phoenix, you know, he runs the Zillow offers here. I mean, he came out of REOs and went to one other bigger step, super smart dude. So yeah, a lot of the people that I surrounded myself with were definitely, you know, on the comeback. Like, you know, we all screwed it up. We learned from it and here's where we go. But you also, you have a lot of people that couldn't get out of their own way. And I don't know what that is. I don't know what it is that drives. I think some of the things that I keep going back to, I've had this conversation with my kids recently is, you know, as we're setting goals with the boys and what they, you know, they've got their eyes on bigger cars and different things. And it's what do you want to drive towards? I don't know about you, but my entire life has been, and I think we have seasons in life of what we're driving towards, mm-hmm. You know, early on, like where my kids are, they're driving towards possessions. Right. I'm working to have a nicer car or I'm working to have a nicer house. And then when you go down the road, you're working to have a greater life. So I've always been one of those ones where I guess not that I'm not content because I love where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I want more. But I think more allows us to help other people. You know, I can be more generous. I can do more things. I can bless more people by continuing to grind. And that's just something, it's always been ingrained in me, like, what's next, right?
All right, everybody, we're going to talk to you about our new sponsor for REI Society. It is PropStream, big data for real estate tailored for you. If you don't know what PropStream is, you need to get it immediately. PropStream provides unmatched access to detailed property records nationwide. They have more data, more features, and investor tools than any other service out there. Trust me, I know. Unlimited searches let you evaluate specific properties or search their database for over 160 million records, both on and off market, that meet your exact investment criteria. Get to target motivated sellers, find cash buyers, accurate comps, especially if you're not a realtor and you need to get accurate comps. And then you have much more with their precise filtering system. This software allows you to work smarter and not harder. PropStream has more data, more features, and investor tools than any other product or service on the market today. You can identify your investment criteria, search, evaluate, and target. That's crucial, guys. PropStream's built-in marketing features make it easy for you to reach your prospects through customized postcards, email campaigns, landing pages, and ringless voicemails. You want to know where you can find properties left and right? You can do it through PropStream. This is where we get our best deals. Go to trial.propstreampro.com/REI Society. This is going to get you a 7-day free trial that you get to play around with. And if you text me PropStream on my phone number, I will send you a live webinar that we did way back in the day that can tell you all about how to utilize this the correct way. So text 404-341-2897. Again, 404-341-2897. Text PropStream to this number, and I will send you a link to a video that teaches you how to utilize PropStream. So go ahead and subscribe today, trial.propstreampro.com/REI Society. Again, trial.propstreampro.com/REI Society. That's going to get you your 7-day free trial. Yeah, I completely agree. I think if you get on out of your own way and you do the work, I mean, you're going to reap some awesome benefit. I mean, nothing comes without hard work in a sense. And honestly, pair that with this business. You have a, like you said earlier, you have a relationship business, and through that relationship business, you can actually inspire, educate, and give people hope. And then through all that process, you're you're basically inspiring and educating and giving yourself hope. So it's kind of like this driving force that just propels you forward, that just pushes you and ingrain you to want to seize the day and take over. And it's not a material thing. It's not a, hey, look at me thing. It's just like, God just says, go forth and prosper somehow.
Right.
What is some wisdom that you can pair with that? Like,
well, I mean, okay. So, you know, go forth and prosper, you know, here's, you take it from that standpoint, and this pertains to anything in life. In fact, I said it to one of my agents this morning. I said, look, you get into real estate, you know, I'm a real estate agent. I have been my whole life, you know, it's leaned off in a bunch of other crazy things, but the most important thing, and you got to remember this from when you're in real estate. So if any of you guys are out there just getting into real estate, really take this to heart. So many people are like, hey, you need to start with your sphere. And, you know, nowadays your social media and everybody needs to know that you do real estate and, you know, go annoy the shit out of everybody for the next 12 months, right? You know, go get your commission breath and your sales breath all over everybody. If I go back to it now, I wish I had spent those first couple of years like diving deep into people's relationships and really getting to know people and how I could help them or add value, not how I could sell them something. And that has been that's my greatest strength. If you ask anybody that works for me, it's the relationships that I have that have allowed me to get here. And it's because the relationship is a mutual benefit. And let me give you an example of that. I sent this email out yesterday to one of my investors who was referred to me by somebody else. These are money guys, right? They got a freaking ton of money. They let me use it, but here's why they let me use it. Not just because they're getting a rate of return. It's because of the email that I sent him yesterday. I said, hey, here's a picture of a family that finally got their house. I had called him 6 months ago. I'm like, hey, I need 225 grand in 48 hours. I got to close on this deal. It's a last minute thing. I'll explain it to you later. Well, what happened was these people had a credit glitch. I was not the listing agent or the buyer's agent. I didn't have anything to do with the transaction. I was just the solution. This family was going to be displaced. They were going to lose the dream that they had. The seller was going to not be able to close on his house that was contingent. I was able to come in and fix everything because I have this relationship with money. Right. And so I sent the investor back. I said, hey, you got a great rate of return, but here's what I want you to feel better about. You got paid to help me help a family, and we all made money at the end of the day. It's in our local economy. This family's life has changed forever because by them locking it in when they did, that was before the market went crazy. They would have had to pay $30,000 or $40,000 more for the same house that they just were able to finance or secure financing on Friday. So with my investors, the relationships, they're getting a rate of return, but they're helping. Right. I get to make money off of their money. They're making money and they know that I'm helping families. So the investment all the way around. So it's a relationship aspect that I've really tried to get people to understand. Like, I've built these tremendous relationships with wealthy people that, you know, their text messages, I need $500,000. I need $200,000. You know, I got lines of credits with all these guys. That is just a text message. So going back to it, one of my lenders is a relationship from when I was 6.
Huh.
The guy watched me grow up.
Man, that's you're right. You know, it's a funny place to be from when you started 21 years ago, or I started 18 years ago and just starting out, making all the mistakes through the school of hard knocks. And then you go through a story like you did, and years later, you're transparent about everything. You work with people, you serve others. Somehow you bump elbows with wealthy individuals and you break bread, build some covenant relationships. And then next thing you know, the money is abundant and it just attracts to you.
Right.
I mean, it's as easy as flipping a text. So I guess I'm saying that now for anybody that's listening. No matter where you start, you just keep on doing the work and serving others, you will actually get to the place that you want to be. And it may not be overnight, but through a little bit of persistence and patience, you can truly create wealth through real estate, obviously, is the venue that we're talking about here. But it's a fun business. I'm having more fun now than I was years ago. How about you?
Oh, yeah. The business is such a change, right? So, you know, when you first get in the business, my dad was always like, hey, you got to be a chameleon, right? You got to blend with everybody, do what they're doing. and you start to almost feel like you're selling your soul to the devil, right? I remember the first time I walked in a pair of shorts and flip-flops to go to a listing appointment, my dad just about fell over.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I got a relationship with this person. It's not about the suit and tie. It's about, am I a real person? So I just kind of come to the conclusion, like, look, I'm going to be as real as I possibly can. And I already know going in everybody's door, I'm not going to be everybody's cup of tea, right? They either trust me and we're going to have a relationship going forward to sell that house or buy that house, or it's not going to, because it's got to be a win-win for me. If everybody feels like they're winning, then I'm good. If somebody feels like they're being taken advantage of, I don't want anything to do with it, because I want everybody to walk away. And a lot of people, believe it or not, there's a lot of people that walk away from selling me a house that are like, dude, I hope you make a shit ton of money when you sell that. We're super grateful for what you did for us. Knock yourself out, right? And that's because there's no preconception when you're going in the door, other than being open and honest and direct about it.
It is a really good feeling. Talking about being a chameleon, going back to what you were responding to, the way your dad had taught you, I was like that for all those years prior to I lost my shit, essentially. Everything I had, 20 rental homes and my real estate mini empire I had built at 27 years old. I guess I'm giving you context just in case you didn't know. But anyways, yeah, I got to the point where I always wanted a tattoo and I never got a tattoo, which I know you have a couple of them. you got to tell us the story about that one here.
We can talk that.
Dude, I didn't get my first tattoo until 2 years ago. I got to the point where I'm just like, I don't give a shit anymore. I'm like, I don't care. I've made it. I don't got anybody to impress. And it is what it is. It doesn't matter. And then, I don't know. So there was something freeing in that where I just didn't feel like I had to impress anybody anymore. Have you ever had to deal with anything like that?
Yeah. When I was first in the business, right? I mean, my first tattoo, my dad was like, that better be removable ink, because he was so against it. And it kind of showed a little bit below my sleeve, both the ones on my arms do. And it was like, it was so faux pas 20 years ago. And he's like, you're going to have to cover that crap up because that's not acceptable. But that was the generation, right? You go forward. I think the second tattoo, I'm pretty sure I got backhanded by my mom for the second round. Finally, the third one, they were just over it. It was, so the one, it's funny because I've got three. I've got a very large piece on my back, two on my arms, back when tribal art was so cool to do. And now I'm like, well, maybe I should add some more meaning to my stuff. But the one tattoo that's on my forearm that says Limitless, it's tattooed on my forearm. It's tattooed on the inner wrist of my wife's forearm in my son's handwriting. And the story behind that is that I watched my dad build about a $200 million portfolio for individual investors during the downturn. My dad worked 20 hours a day trying to get ahead. And these people made promise after promise to him, especially one investor that really did not live up to his promises. And my dad dies, and this guy, like, he bailed, right? 400 properties that we managed. He had always told my dad, you're going to sell all these properties and this is where you're going to make your money. And since then, he sold a bunch of stuff, but he never lived up to his promise. My dad worked tirelessly for this person, but my dad never went outside the box. He never said, like, okay, I'm giving all these guys these great deals, but I'm not trying to partner with one of them or borrow money from one of them. And I'm selling everything for pennies on the dollar for a paycheck. And so my dad had a very limited mindset, right? So I don't even know exactly where it came into play, but the word limitless was just something like, I am not going to limit myself to anything that goes on in this business. It kind of really stems from, I guess it's the 21st century version of Philippians 4:13, right? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, right? So you take limitless, that's the short version of that scripture, right? There's no limits to what I can do if I'm asking questions, building relationships, and it's empowered me to live that way. So I learned from my dad, but then on top of it, it was also very important to me to help others, especially in the real estate industry, see the opportunities that they're missing to ultimately build their wealth in something that they know. Because I know that you coach and you teach and all that other stuff. You know, if you truly survey the real estate community, only about 5% of them actually invest or own real estate. The rest of them are doing it for a job.
You're so dead on and right about that. I used to co-own a real estate brokerage. Actually, I started it and then I brought in a partner and then he bought me out.
That was one of the dumbest things I ever did. I don't know about you.
Yeah. I'm like, this son of a gun's built it up to over 100 agents now. I'm like, where did that come from? I'm out of the picture. You're going. It was his calling though. But yeah. Nobody's building assets. They're just selling real estate. They're not building assets for themselves. And it's like, guys, what are you doing? And I guess that's the mission behind the REI Society, is create a society of people that want to real estate invest and different facets of real estate, but to better themselves. They don't have to get rich or wealthy, but they can create wealth over time that will be something that they can pass on to their heirs. And that's the whole thing, is just to educate people a little bit more and show them these awesome stories like your story and whoever else that's been on the podcast, to bring them to the point where they can believe. And that's the mission, is to inspire, educate, and give people hope. Let's change subjects real quick. This month being rental month, we've talked about it at the beginning of the podcast. Now we're getting close to the end here. What is something that the audience can take away that you can teach us on rentals outside of the creative strategy that you taught us earlier?
I think there's two things. I think one, if you're, we go back to the real estate industry. If you are not in real estate and you want to invest in real estate, make sure that you ask the person that's going to guide you to owning a rental property that them themselves have experienced owning a rental property. You have to have somebody that understands the pain and understands the knowledge. Like for me, I go through with, I'll give you something for InvestorWise. Where I live, which I'm only invested where I live because I like my backyard, right? I know it. We own a property management company, so it makes it very easy for me to invest my backyard. But I always take my investors through this piece, which is, there's a buy box that makes the ideal rental property here. There's a geographical location. There's a type of property that's going to make the most sense and make the most money for short-term and long-term. And here's what I mean by that. My buy box consists of five things that I don't ever buy, or that you should buy, either way you will look at it. I don't own condos and townhomes. Okay. You end up paying for a tenant's utilities and other things that you never recover. You're also subject to special assessments and different things. It's never worked out or penciled out unless you're buying $20,000 condos that can rent for $1,000 a month. It doesn't pencil out in our market. I like older single family homes that are in that under 2,000 square feet range. Reason being is they typically have a single AC unit, not multiples. They, 3-4 bedrooms, 2 baths, they stay full, and they're more in rentable areas when it comes down to it. And some people are like, oh, well, I want a newer home. Well, let me tell you what comes with a newer home. It comes with an HOA, which is an added babysitting service and an added management cost because people are not taking care of weeds, pulling trash cans in, all those other things. They think that having a tile roof is going to be like, oh, I never have to do anything with this. Well, most people don't realize that after 20, 25 years, the tile's got to come up and new paper's got to be put down, right? So all of these things, and I like to stay below a certain price range. That's going to depend on the market that you're in, obviously. Here I like to stay below 250, so 250 is kind of the sweet spot. You really have to hunt for that right now, but the older homes just tend to have longer term tenants, and we're able to buy better deals in that. And they stay rented longer. And then I don't buy anything with pools, one for liability, two, because they're like having an AC unit. They have to be replastered every 7 to 10 years. You've got pool pumps breaking. So the point to buying a rental property is to buy something with the least amount of liability going forward. The least amount of phone calls I can get from a tenant, the better. So I'm not getting HOA calls. I'm not getting neighbor calls on condos. The pool isn't broken. I have one AC unit that, God forbid, if I have to replace it for $5,000, it's going to be the only one I have to ever buy while I own it.
So you really love single family houses, single family homes. Do you enjoy investing in multifamily?
So again, where I'm at, they stopped building multifamily in 1970 here. So the multifamily that you tend to buy is going to be in, you know, the cheaper, lower income areas. We've, you know, I've had some clients with them. I love multifamily. It would be awesome, but I don't like the areas they're located in. I mean, the last multifamily I sold, I'm pretty sure multiple firearms were required every time I went, right? It's just not something I want to deal with.
Right.
And I think that the tenant turnover is much less in the single fam. Right. Just, and that may be here. Other areas might be different.
All right, let's wind down with a couple of rapid fire questions that everybody, sure. every podcast host does. I've come up with a couple of new ones, and you're the first person I'm going to try this one on.
Great.
If you could go back to February of this year, 2020, right before we shut the country down, what advice would you give yourself to help you have a better experience through all of this?
Better experience through all of this.
Whatever I would've... this is for you.
I would have bought a lot more homes back then.
A lot of fire selling going on back then.
Huh? Well, here's the thing, right? Experience for me, I wish there was, you know, let me, if I could have done something different, I wish there was more I could have done for other people to make it a better experience for them in some way, shape, or form, whether it be first responders or nurses or, you know, the single mom that's got kids at home that is like, work is a problem. I wished I would have done a better job of finding ways to give more.
Right.
Because we really didn't, good or bad, everybody's got an opinion. We didn't feel the COVID stuff, right? We work from home, we have an office. I wasn't big on the mask thing. I just wasn't bought in.
All right. Well, here's another new one. Is your temperament or investing techniques more passive, aggressive, or unassuming?
Oh, I'm aggressive as all get out right now. The reason I say that is because looking at the market again, this is kind of where, you know, if you're going to start investing in real estate, you really want a guide that has their temperature on the market and what's happening with rentals and those types of things. So I'll give you a great scenario. Right now in our market, we literally have people lining up at houses to see them. Yeah. There is as many as 10 to 15 offers on one house under 300 grand right now, if you can find it. It's super cutthroat.
Right.
The rental market in that same price range is insane. We're getting $1,800, $1,900 for a house that rented for $900 5 years ago. On top of that, we just had an article recently come out that Phoenix is going to have a 10-year shortage of rental homes going forward.
That's crazy. I think Atlanta's in the same type of market you guys are in. I've heard a lot about your market. And the little bit that I have read about it, it's the same thing going on here. I know a lot of people in different markets, and it's not as aggressive or upbeat as yours or ours is, but it's insane. I mean, that's the only way I can describe it. It's just insane. I've never seen anything like it before.
Right. Well, I mean, I saw it in 2006. The difference was that market had two indicators that should have been known, right? We didn't have good loans back then. I mean, you know, your dog and your cat could get a loan, you know, back in 2006, and it was 100% loans, and it was so investor driven. That's what drove the prices back in 2006. Right now, it's owner occupant driven. It's interest rate driven. Somebody that buys a house right now, I mean, you know, somebody just came into my office, they're like, yeah, I can lock in at 2.6% for 30 years. You're like, wait, you can buy a $300,000 house on an introductory credit card rate?
It's true. It's true.
For 30 years, like that's what's driving the cost. So, you know, you look at anybody that gets a loan like that. I mean, the mortgage itself has value, not just the house, the mortgage itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I just refinanced a few rental homes. I was getting 3.17% for cash out, an investor cash out refi.
Right.
I'm like,
right.
And I'm pulling that money out and putting it in my pocket with paying no taxes. Obviously, the tax benefit.
Because you're not selling it, right?
Because I'm not selling it. It's just, it's like, what better market we've ever been in? So this whole or cluster of questions I have now are all brand new questions, and I'm trying them all out on you. So you're the first person on the show to answer all this, because I'm usually like pop culture this, what books you read, everything that everybody else does. But these are all brand new questions for the Real Estate Society. Are you an investor that plays things close to the chest, or are you the guy that analyzes by or has that analysis by paralysis?
What do you mean the analysis by paralysis? Like overthinking it?
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially, are you somebody that's going to buckshot something, or are you just going to study it way too much? Obviously, like I said, these are brand new questions. So I need to reword it.
No, it's so yeah. So, I mean, the bigger question is like, does it, you know, do you think things through all the way to the penny, or are you hedging? Right. So I would say I know my market well enough to hedge.
Right.
Because, you know, some of your market's a little different than mine, right? Because you've got some of those older homes and older neighborhoods, a little bit harder to comp. I can look at a neighborhood and go, well, there's three of the identical homes that sold for this and I can buy it for this, right? So I can look at a property just based on pictures and a 2-minute look on the tax records and tell you whether or not I'm going to buy it. And when I pull the trigger on it, I give it to my team and they write contracts. They get it signed up, they get it closed, they go to the lender. Like, that's now I have an inventory, which then I'm like, okay, now what do I do with it? But you talk about wholetailing earlier. You know, my hedge is that where the market is going, I'd rather control that under $200,000 purchase price right now because I know what's being fought for and I know how much rent is on those. So either way, there's not a whole lot of risk.
Completely agree. Do you feel like we're in hyperinflation or do you feel like we're in a recession?
I don't feel like we're in the recession. I you know, I feel that, and I don't even know about hyperinflation. I think the inflation is potentially going to be a problem with all the money that's been given out and the PPP loans and all that other stuff. Like, it's going to have to be paid for somewhere. Right. So I think that's really a hard question to ask depending on the market somebody's in. Like, you wouldn't think COVID ever happened in Phoenix.
Same here.
Like, other than places being closed down and the gyms and the fight on the news for things, real estate market is nuts. You know, everything is, people are spending money. I mean, my wife's a general contractor and the amount of money that's being spent on renovations right now is crazy.
So much to add there. I don't want to, you know, go too much further. I want to be respectful of your time, but like the Fed has, what is the total GDP? Like $20 trillion in just this year alone, the Fed has dumped $10 trillion into the U.S. economy or something kind of close to that. Like, we're in interesting times. Or as several people utilize the unprecedented times, it's a very interesting time. It's very hard to predict which way we're going. I can't find anything that's been similar to this kind of economy in my studies. So I'm very curious to see where this is going, but I completely agree with you. I'm driving over from Georgia this morning. Nobody's wearing masks, or not too often. You know, nobody, I know there's some areas that do, but then you go to South Carolina, everybody's wearing masks. It's like a different country almost. So yeah, it's interesting right now. I tell you what, I'm going to end with this last question because this is a really good question. And it is a question that everybody asks, which is, what is your favorite book and why?
I think the most recent one that I read that's really made a huge impact on me is, the good news is it's not going to be a very known one. It's called The 12-Week Year. Brian Moran wrote it. Very interesting from the standpoint that we make these 12-month goals and we start off on fire, they fizzle, and then you try to pick them back up at the end of the year. Well, what if you take the same type of goals or the same type of drive and you keep that drive that starts at the beginning all the way through the end and then you start it over? So everything in our company right now, and if you go back to the book like Traction and some of the other ones, it was 90-day targets. Right. Well, this book is like, okay, I have a 12-week year. So I'm finishing up. I have 5 weeks left of my year. So, you know, there's certain things I want to accomplish. And it's a 90-day period. So it's a 90-day sprint to get these things accomplished, right? Right. So it's not like, well, you know, I'm trying to hit my sales goal in December. I got 5 weeks to finish up what the goal was. I have 5 weeks to finish up all the stuff that you seem to have dialed in to launch my podcast. And I'm like, okay, what has to be done in the next 5 weeks to make sure that this goes off? So I'm not giving myself till the end of the year or, hey, I want to start a podcast this year. It's like in the next 90 days, this shit has to be done. You know, and that's how I'm trying to move it forward. Hey, check this out. If you are getting this, two things to leave you. Would love to have you follow me on Instagram. I'm a real live human. I have food fights. I drive fast cars, have all kinds of fun with my family while I'm doing this crazy business. There's some good information in there. I am not a very good TikTok star like Brandon is. So I do not have that going for me. I have not figured that out. Also, if your real estate agent would love to connect with you just with giving you information, right? Text agent to 602-993-8600. That'll kind of get you into a feed and a subscribe. I promise I will not send you anything you do not want. If you are an investor and maybe you're curious about the Phoenix market, text investor to the same number, 602-993-8600. Try both of those. If you're an agent, there's specific things for the agent, specific things for the investor. So it is two different funnels, I guess, if you want to call it. But honestly, if you don't want to connect, it's all good. I promise. I'm sure your inbox is full of randomness. So I mentioned a little while ago, this is kind of my crazy life. My wife is a general contractor. We have complete opposite roles. She actually is pretty freaking amazing. She's flipped 600 homes for me in the last 6 years. She's responsible for all the design, all the construction from start to finish. I buy a house, I give it to her with her blessing. It costs me a lot of shoes, put it that way. But anyway, she's pretty fun to follow as well. It's Wendy Valentine on Instagram with an E. And yeah.